And welcome to Bathrop Spears Broadsides, the streaming version on October 24th, 2013. A bit tired this evening, so bear with me. My name is Robert Norris, and this is a show that concerns itself with, tonight anyway, with the voices of poor people on the street and updates on protests against the laws that criminalize artists, musicians, and poor people on the street. There was a demonstration today, quite successful in terms of the number of people who turned out and the positive impact, no police harassment or very little, and lots of colorful commentary back and forth. People spoke their minds and chalked their minds as well on the sidewalk, to the consternation of some. And that was all in front of Forever 21, with an eye to protesting the shrinking, snatched sidewalks. Compliments of Julie Hendy and the Santa Cruz City Council. Hendy is the staff person who, along with Scott Collins, is responsible for creating and presenting this piece of crap that the City Council rubber-stamped a month ago now. And a lot of people were, almost everyone I talked to, was concerned about opposing it. The demonstration was created by Phil Posner. Micah Posner's dad. He's a city council member. Not Phil, but Micah. And we're not going to start there, though. We're going to start back a bit, because there were interviews that I wasn't able to play that I want to be able to get to, and I'm going to go straight to them now. That happened starting on Saturday. That would be Saturday the 19th, I guess. So, just quickly, if you want to call in during the show, because, for example, you perhaps read some of my online comments on Sentinel articles around the Task Force meeting last night. That's the more properly known as the Task Force on Public Safety, where I showed up with a poster or two and a bunch of flyers, and then later left my comments online on the Sentinel article written by Shanna McCord. You're welcome to call in. Call-in number here is 427-3772. You're welcome to call in if you have any thoughts on updates or updates on things that are happening in Santa Cruz, particularly having to do with poor people and poor people outside, although other issues are not barred, just I tend to skew back into the unhoused, houseless street folks, people outside. So I want to remind you again, we are looking for a transmitter site, and when we find one, we will be broadcasting at you. But if we don't find one, we may even have to stop streaming. So keep your ears open, keep your eyes open, let us know if you see one. Any place downtown that has a tall tree or a second story could be the answer to our problems. So give us a shout at the website, freakradio.org, and give us a call in on my show if you have any thoughts on what's going on. If you're listening to this show on the 24th of October, 2013, then it's a live show. Otherwise, you're listening to a taped show. So, with that said, let's check out a few interviews. These are from the Food Now Bombs meal on Saturday, October 19th, which happens in front of the post office downtown at 4 o'clock. I think I showed up a bit later, but let's listen in. From a street performer who was one of the main organizers of the protest today on Pacific Avenue against the Thou Shalt Not Perform on Sidewalks Except in Teeny Tiny Boxes on Raised Platforms with Large Distances Between Yourself and Other Performers, and essentially relegating you to 5% of the sidewalks. Actually less, but 5% and less. And we're listening to Corkscrew Tony, who was talking about his stay-away order from City Hall because he was there with a corkscrew, which the city authorities construed as a weapon. And I think I've interviewed him about this issue before, so we only touch on it briefly.
Stay-away order up
Today, by the way, is October 19th. We're at the Food Not Bombs meal.
I'll be back with another corkscrew.
As you intend not to be intimidated by their anti-corkscrew activity?
Well, I don't want them to look at my picnic basket or my cooler.
I see. So you, again, it's a matter of search and seizure for you?
I think it's search everything as long as they use a rubber glove.
They usually do. We've been talking with...
Tony, corkscrew.
Thank you, corkscrew, Tony. We're talking with
Paul Bernardino.
And Paul, you're sampling the fare here at the Food Not Bombs meal. I see salad and veggies and looks like apple pie on your plate.
Well, I highly commend Food Not Bombs because their message is as clear and needed as their delicious vegetarian food. And I have been trying to get other soup kitchens and free food places to be followed the good example of Food Not Bombs to go vegetarian. But the other soup kitchens that I've been to and talk with their leaders and soup kitchens in San Francisco, they adamantly refuse, militantly refuse to have anything to do with anything vegetarian.
I see. They're big animal killers from way back.
I noticed that the more they, the people who really are militantly insist on killing animals are military-oriented and bombs-away types.
Hey, man, I'm a hamburger lover. You calling me a general?
Well, in general, I'm talking in general terms. In general terms.
General? Is that a little pun you're making?
The four-star general? Yeah. I mean, I'm finding this to be really like today. Yesterday I was at Holy Cross, and they're against any type of vegetarian, blueberry oil, anything vegetarian, although they serve vegetable. You know, they're a contradiction. I said, well, meat is not good for you, and it's documented, it's on the internet, it's in libraries, it's in bookstores, but they...
Who did you speak to?
Holy Cross, the woman, I don't remember her name, but every food...
The soup kitchen down on Morris Street?
Holy Cross Food Pantry, every soup kitchen, every free sit-down dinner place that I go to, I'm on a crusade, and I pass out vegetarian pamphlets in large quantity, maybe not the past few weeks because I'm busy as a tailor. I do custom tailoring. But I've noticed that every time one would go to a free soup kitchen place or wherever there's food distributed, like a pantry here in Santa Cruz.
Well, I catch your drift on this, Paul, and I hear that you're struggling with this campaign, but what else, what other observations do you have about the different food services in Santa Cruz? Anything, do you find that they're non-discriminatory, or do you find that food varies in quality?
Santa Cruz has the best... the most and the best food, free food places anywhere that I've encountered, anywhere in Northern California.
So do people flock to Santa Cruz for the food, as Take Back Santa Cruz would have us believe?
No, they don't necessarily. It's sort of like a kept secret. They don't really flock here, and so they are, that's the short answer. I'll give you the long answer later.
Yet they have the best food services. In fact, haven't you been organizing mobs of homeless people that come to Santa Cruz to sample the food and sleep in the streets and distribute needles throughout the city?
Well, I'm glad you brought up the needles, because the needle exchange, there's some very good people who are doing needle exchange.
It was closed down back in January.
Around here?
And the Barson Street area was closed down. I mean, they're still out at Emmeline outside the city.
The needle exchange is active in San Francisco with Reverend Rivers.
I'm thinking about Santa Cruz. Are you spending most of your time here or San Francisco?
Most of my time here, and then on weekends I sometimes go up there and Berkeley, Oakland. I have noticed that the people who distribute free food, soup kitchens, free food pantries, many of them really don't know or understand the plight of the homeless, hungry, down and out, and the destitute. They automatically think, their mentality is that give them any kind of food, they'll eat it. They're desperate. Just give them any unhealthy food. But fortunately, Food Not Bombs here gives very, very healthy food. And
Let me say the subject here, that you are also sleeping outside.
No, I'm staying with a friend right now.
So you've become a law-abiding citizen.
Yes, I've always been, and law-abiding abiding. Our government is not law abiding.
No, I don't want to hear any attacks on Obama. We love him, you know.
Well, he is a very, he's a war criminal. He belongs in jail with his four-star generals. They belong in jail. They are.
Don't like drones. What is your problem, son?
I just don't like my village and towns being bombed in the Middle East or whatever. And I just, it's very, very, it's not nice. It's not nice.
Well, let's leave it there before you say something. It might cause me to have to,
yeah,
should we say, turn you
obscene.
In.
I better, you better cut this off. I might see something very obscene.
You already mentioned Obama's name. That's pretty much enough of a beginning. So we've been talking with
Paul Bernardino of the People's Investigation of 9/11.
Thank you, Paul.
Okay.
What's your name, sir? You're in the middle of drinking something.
Yeah, Dennis.
And Dennis, you're here at the Food Not Bombs table. I see some rather colorful little desserts over there. It looks like, what is it, strawberry shortcake or something?
Strawberry shortcake and an angel food cake.
What are you trying to rot the teeth of the entire homeless community?
Well, people need their
sweets.
Carbs, you know. I mean, they need a little spike of energy there.
I see there is a salad bowl, as usual, heavily drenched in dressing.
Olive oil, omega-3, you know, it's good for you.
Various packages of crackers, or salt, probably pepper. Looks like where's the beef?
Well, Daniel, you can tell us what we have today.
What kind of protein do you have for the protein-starved masses?
Eggplant.
Eggplant, I see.
And potatoes.
It's always funny, the word
eggplant and potato salad.
It's not a protein, son. I don't know where you got your education and nutrition. Certainly it wasn't Beijing, I can tell you that.
Phytoprotein. You're familiar with phytoprotein?
I'm not.
Well, that's plants are made of protein, just like we are, you know.
Chlorophyll, that sort of thing.
Well, chlorophyll is not a protein. It's an enzyme, whatever, you know. But
just testing you, you know.
Well,
let's make sure you're on the up and up.
Trying to get the record straight there. So
you're a man who's been involved in a number of other causes. I know that, you know, you've been involved in the Santa Cruz Coalition to ignore racial complaints. Then there's the American Civil Liberties lack of union. And then we have a number of groups. What's been going on?
Well, I just help out as best I can. And Santa Cruz Coalition, Community Coalition to Overcome Racism.
Conservation of Co-option?
No.
I mean, certainly not.
Everyone's doing their best to do what can be done.
And
but
what exactly are they doing?
Well, we're sort of going through a period of
re-examination.
Re-examination, and there's been a big turnover, and we're looking for new funding sources
and
whatnot.
Looking for new funding sources.
Well, you need a little bit of something.
You gotta have a little moolah boola.
A little bit.
It takes money to make money, right?
Well, no, you need a little bit to grease the rails
grease
or whatever.
The wheels.
The wheels.
With the big wheels, actually.
Yeah. Well,
they're kind of greasy already.
Yeah. No matter. We have plans for the future, and they will.
I was glad to hear that there are many plans for the future.
Realizing soon.
Okay. Now, absolutely nothing specific is happening.
Well, there are specific things we have in mind.
Like what?
Well, we're very concerned about racial profiling and hope to serve as...
One instance of racial profiling that your group is actually focusing on in Santa Cruz?
That's the thing we want to be in a position to...
You have to be able to find one instance.
We want to be sort of a clearinghouse for that, so people will come to our organization if they have a complaint, and then we can help them follow it through.
So far, you haven't found one complaint.
Well, we haven't yet rolled that out.
See. You're waiting for the appropriate moment.
No, we're waiting to get ourselves organized. You just don't snap your fingers and, everything materializes.
You haven't got a phone number and a form you can use for someone to fight. Wait a minute.
Well, you got to work on something to get it done, you know. Things don't just happen, willy-nilly by snapping.
My head is blowing off here. Well, let's move on to another subject. I know that there, for example, is a proposed $24 million new jail appropriation.
Before we get to the new jail appropriation, which was voted 2 days later, 3 days later, actually, last Tuesday, I'm giving a bunch of sarcastic commentary or reaction to Dennis, who's on the board of directors of SCORE, which is a countywide coalition concerned with, they say, eliminating racial profiling. It numbers among its people Simba Kenyatta and other activists, and I've repeatedly been quite critical of their failure to follow up on complaints received by their group years ago that I publicized when I was trying to be helpful myself. And so far, I keep hearing about these meetings of board members and fundraising activities of this and other groups like the ACLU who are impervious to local civil rights violations or don't seem to be interested at all in exposing or publicizing or supporting the abolition of these in a particular way by holding the agencies accountable who are violating the rights of people, whether it's the sheriffs or the Santa Cruz Police Department, First Alarm, Panther Protective Services, you name the group. So I'm always, you know, hopeful that... Actually, I'm not always hopeful. I'm quite lost hope in these groups, but I'm willing to take new information if it comes in. Dennis was commandeered by Steve Plaich, who apparently seems to be gearing up for yet another run at the Santa Cruz City Council, to be on the board of the ACLU and the board of SCORE. And Dennis is a sincere activist who shows up at a lot of events to engage in some of the grubby day-to-day work, as contrasted with Steve Plaich, who looks in on the events, I'm thinking of events concerning homeless civil rights, that at least I'm involved with, and doesn't stay long, and also refuses to bring these issues to a head at any of the groups where he's sitting on the board of directors and has been sitting for over a year. So I'm always a bit cranky about these issues, and for, I think, good reason, to people who claim to be pushing these organizations. That doesn't mean I don't feel that... I think, very good friends with Dennis, or certainly friends with Dennis, and certainly have civil relations with Steve Plaich, in spite of the fact that he's declared me a persona non grata for life from his website, Citizens for a Better Santa Cruz, because I put up a link in violation of his wishes to the Ken Collins video, which showed homeless people being abused by a member of the Clean Team, and he wanted to, I think, patch up relations with Pamela Comstock of the Santa Cruz City Council, who's also associated with Take Back Santa Cruz, co-founder, in fact. And that's a group that, in the words of T.J. Magallanes, took over the clean team. Although, as I understand it, Pamela Comstock denies that she was involved in any of the scurrilous activities that Ken Collins was actually captured on video doing. And that was the video that apparently the straw that broke Steve Plaich's back, having it linked to his video because Ken Collins was making numerous comments online about the homeless and assorted topics. I felt it was appropriate for people to be aware, if they weren't, of his background. And Steve was enraged. But Dennis is actually always good-natured in these interchanges, and he was around today doing protest at the Forever 21 in the Phil Posner blanket sit-in, which featured at least half a dozen, if not more, blankets. Let's hear some more from the 19th at the Food Not Bombs meal.
Coming up at the Board of Supervisors in two days.
Well, we'll be there, and to oppose that, you know, along with Sin Barris and others who are...
Huff itself may also show up.
Yeah, no, definitely that's...
You haven't been showing up at the Huff meeting. Is that because you've decided Huff is the wrong stuff?
No, I mean, I live out in Boulder Creek, and it's...
too far to come for you, eh?
No, I have other things that intervene, but no, I still support Huff and what you're doing and hope to attend meetings in the future, but, you know...
Anything you want to announce about anything coming up in the next week or two that people should know about?
Well, let's see. Nothing specific that I'm involved in. Oh, there is the UNA Association anniversary of the UN organization, which will be, I think, this coming Saturday. And we'll have a sort of a street fair, I think it is. But yeah, there's going to be there's notices of that are posted around town. It's in the papers and all. I don't have
what time and we don't know when and where.
Specifics as noon to three, something like that. You know,
where?
At the Galleria.
Oh yes, that's the standard place where they usually have that fair.
So yeah, that's something I'm involved with as well.
And as I understand it, from a more recent report from Gail Page, there's actually going to be a street fair, not at the Galleria, but on one of the side streets. It could be Cooper Street, or it could be Lincoln, I'm not sure. Or it could be Walnut, goodness, you have to look around downtown on Saturday. And I believe it's late morning, early afternoon, but that's a UN Association street fair. Again, I'm relying on my memory. And since I don't, occasionally Huff shows up there with a table. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, civil rights organization. It's a good place to go if you want to get some more information about Huff. But then again, you can also come to the Huff meetings on Wednesday, 11 o'clock at the Sub Rosa at 703 Pacific. Or you can call the Huff line at 423-HUFF, 423-4833.
Well, anything else you wish to comment on?
Well, yeah, there's a lot to comment on now, isn't there? But, yeah, right off the top of my head, I can't.
Well, we'll be around. You, we've been talking with?
Dennis.
Thanks, Dennis. Well, we have Food Not Bomber, and her message is...
Come help us, or bring food, and send money.
Come help us cook, if you want. Every Saturday at noon.
How can people get it? Just show up?
You can show up if you know the location. If not,
it's a secret location.
Well, we don't like to advertise it as a private residence.
I'm sure Take Back Santa Cruz has plenty of chefs that would want to add a little something to the stew.
You can contact us through our Facebook page.
And the Facebook is under?
Just look up Santa Cruz Food Not Bombs and you should be able to find us.
Thank you. We've been talking with?
Daniel.
Thank you, Daniel. Here, everybody. We're talking with
Russ Munoz.
And Russ, you say there's police pressure?
Yeah, there's a lot of pressure around here, man. They are looking for any little thing, you know, any little thing to give you some warning or to give you a piece of ticket. They're going to come down October 24th. It all changes. They're going to come down hard on everybody, you know, anybody that does any little small little thing.
Has this happened to you recently?
Well, just people that are around me that I see out here, you know, I see police just harassing people just because they are police officers.
And when was the last time you noticed this?
Every day, you know, it's not just
it. See it happen today or yesterday?
It's happening all the time. You got these blue coats, the ones that first alarm dude. There's one big guy, the guy.
Big John, perhaps?
Big John, I think. I don't know his name, but...
Big John.
It's two big ones. One looks like a cowboy, and the other one's kind of pudgy. Yeah, I don't know his name.
Only one I know.
He's literally just anybody. Bicycles, skateboarders, anybody that look like they're going to do something wrong, he's right in your face.
And you remember a particular incident that happened in the last week or so that you saw?
Well, I see little things all the time, what they do. They make little statements when you're walking by.
Such as?
Let me see a statement. Things like intimidation. You just by being out there, you know, you can't do very much on the mall. You can't sit around. You can't stand around. You can't do much.
How you doing?
You know, there's all the...
Has it changed since you... How long have you been here?
I've been coming here since 75.
And have you noticed any changes in the scene?
No, it's always been the merchants fighting the street people. There ain't nothing new about that. It's always been that way. When I first came here, it was the same old thing. But it's always been with the drummers. You know, the drummers were the thing that they was always hate. Now it's like the vendors. You know, all kind of part of it now, you know. But back then, it was the same way. It's always fighting against the merchants. They always wanted us out of here.
Let's talk about Big John again.
So we have a fan of Big John's. Are you a big fan of John's? Not a fan of Big John. Why don't you like Big John? What's the problem? What's the deal?
Is he acts too much like John Wayne?
Maybe it's one of his fans. Maybe it's a movie star. He's dazzled by John, perhaps. He wants to, this is this man's dream. Who are you to stand in the way of Big John who wants to be like John Wayne? Who can say? In any case...
Big John, the guy we're talking about, is a first alarm security guard who I first encountered in the library, stalking the library. Someone complained he was following people into the bathroom in order to I don't know, make sure they were wee-weeing right. I'm not sure exactly what the reason was. Who knows? Could have been a legitimate reason. But I've also observed him. He's a very tall, very burly fellow who, I don't, you know, a person's size isn't necessarily indicate they are aggressive or trying to be intimidating, but I don't have specifics to actually say why I have the impression he is intimidating other than other people's reports and his failure to respond to questions that I ask him. And admittedly, I am pretty critical of him. I mean, I have in the past mocked him when he has appeared, suggesting that we definitely need more security, John. Come on over here. You can protect us with your gun, taser, and nightstick, please. Indicating that I don't find his presence or company reassuring in the area. And I notice that the security guards are regularly used, or have been used recently, or at least in the past year, to run homeless people out of the library, off the library grounds, off the city council grounds, and out of the downtown area, and out of the parks. And that's, you know, that's more than just an impression. There are actual accounts of this happening. But, and you heard them on this radio station. Let's hear some more.
Any thoughts?
No.
And again, we've been talking with
Russ Munoz. Thanks, Russ.
So, well, you say that on Saturday night there was a...
No, this is Friday night.
Friday night there was an event.
Friday night at MA, you know, the Museum of Art and History, sponsored something, fire festival or something. Yeah, like what they have at the Burning Man, you know, festival. They cordoned off...
They burned a homeless person downtown?
Well, no, they cordoned off, you know, whatever street that is, you know, yeah, I can't remember street names, but right around by MA there, and they had, well, there was a couple of scantily clad women perched atop a van, shaking their booties and whatnot. I mean, it was...
Scantily clad men with erections, masturbating?
Well, they were in the crowd, perhaps, but it was definitely pornographic, softcore, but nonetheless.
Erotic.
Erotic, and I thought it was really corrupting the young people in the audience.
Children were beginning to hump each other.
Not on a par with the chalking graffiti, but definitely of the same ilk, I would say, the same character.
Were there needles involved?
Well, there was a lot of fire and brimstone. I mean, so...
I see.
Yeah.
So maybe the needles were coming up next.
Yeah, but definitely this was state-sponsored pornography as far as I'm concerned.
Shocking. Shocking and destroying. I want to thank you.
I really think at the next city council
on Tuesday.
Meeting on Tuesday, Pamela, whatever her name is...
Mayor Bryan?
No, Pamela...
Comstock.
Comstock should really be called out on the fact that, you know, they allowed this under their watch. You know, this sort of really obscene display of human flesh.
Mmm. I mean, ugh.
Yeah, really. So, I mean, there were butts and boobs, you know, overflowing their confines.
Not cocks and rings or anything like that.
Well, I, you know, looked away, but...
And we'll have to leave this titillating discussion because we have an incoming phone call, probably from Mike Rhodes. Hi, you're on Free Radio there.
Hey, Robert, it's Mike Rhodes.
Hey, Mike, I was just looking over your story, which I forwarded to the Huff E-List. The grain silo, the canal bank, homeless encampment is destroyed, graphically illustrated in living color.
Yeah, it's not a particularly happy story. The sort of the best thing about it, I can say, is that there was significant resistance to the destruction of the encampment with, probably 50 community supporters coming out to join the 30 or so homeless people that were there to try and stop the city from destroying the encampment. Ultimately, the effort failed. And the city did destroy the encampment, but people did fight and actually provided some space for people to move their property out, physically stopping the city from bringing bulldozers into that encampment for several hours.
Is this the first time that's happened?
There's been resistance before. in 2011 at the Santa Fe encampment, a large group of community activists and homeless people linked arms and stopped the city from bringing their bulldozers in at that time as well. What happened in that case was the city then simply went to the other side of the encampment. This was a very long street, maybe a block or two long, and came at it from the other side. And then when people went down to that end, then the city brought their bulldozers into the middle. So it was like, you know, you're trying to chase them all over, and there wasn't really enough of us to do that. The other thing that the city does is, like what they did yesterday, was when they saw all the people there blocking the roadways, they simply went to a more remote encampment, which was 200 yards away, and spent hours and hours cleaning that up. I think they were just killing time, hoping that some people would go away, because it's hard to get lots of people to stay all day. And I likened it to a military operation where the city had thought out all these contingencies. They had plans for whatever people were going to do. And one of those strategies is to just stall and let people drift away and then come when there's not as many people there. So the real destruction of the encampment didn't take place till 2 or 3 in the afternoon, and it had started about 7 in the morning. So it was a long day here in Fresno yesterday.
What was the weather like?
Oh, it's actually as good as it gets in the 70s. Clear. Actually quite pleasant.
What happened to the people whose dwellings were eventually bulldozed?
So what happened is that the people who were blockading the entrance to the homeless encampment, there was two entrances. They blocked both entrances. It's a very narrow entrance into this encampment. So they blockaded both ends, and the homeless people that were living there were very upset, and it was very frustrating. And when they saw them destroying the encampment a couple hundred yards away, it was they were quite upset and yelling and screaming at the city workers. But in the end, they decided that they would rather save their property than make a statement by getting arrested and taken away. And it was more important to them to save their property and get it to a safe place than to be arrested and removed and then have their property taken, maybe destroyed. So they negotiated with the city-appointed attorney and made an agreement that we would be allowed to bring a U-Haul trailer in while the bulldozers were held back. And the city held up that agreement. The U-Haul came in. Everybody helped load the U-Haul truck up. I think it made a couple of trips. Some of the people were put up into a hotel by some of the homeless advocates for the night. My understanding is that they were looking today for a new place to set up a camp, which is going to be a difficult thing because what's going on here is that the city has drawn a line in the sand and they're saying there will be no more encampment.
And just a brief question, considering the fact that you guys did a successful lawsuit about the destruction of property, although you're now attempting to get the city to comply with a second lawsuit, I guess there was no confidence that the city would follow, even in the glare of publicity, the court's requirement that their property be properly stored and cataloged, even if they were arrested.
Well, Okay, let's talk about that for a minute, because the city actually has changed their strategies in the last couple of years, and they've really their policy and their actions have evolved over the last couple of years to where now what they do is they come out and film everything. The lead workers have video cameras connected to glasses so that it records audio and video of everything. So they go and they, so you can see exactly what they're seeing, and they talk to people about whether they want their property stored or not. If they want it stored, they give them bags. They write out a receipt. They put it in the bag. They give a receipt to the person. And then they put it on a flatbed truck, which is presumably, and if it's not, then that's another issue. But I assume that it's going to a storage facility somewhere, which reminds me we need to check out and make sure that it actually is. But that is what they're doing. And so they have figured out a way to comply with the court order in that they seem to be storing everything that is of apparent value. If homeless people tell them, no, I'm walking away, I don't care about any of this stuff here, they've got that recorded. They've got it on video. And then they're free to go in there and destroy that. Otherwise, if there's any question about abandoned property, they put it in bags or put it on a flatbed truck if it's a big item, and they haul it all away. The problem is, and here's the real problem, Bob, Robert, is that they can't, the homeless people themselves cannot possibly go and retrieve their property and put it anywhere because it would simply be taken again. And, you know, so what's going on here is that the city has come up with this policy where they're storing people's property, but in addition to that, if you leave your property, a shopping cart with clothing or sleeping bags or whatever, or even if it's not in a shopping cart, you have it in a duffel bag or whatever, and you leave it for any length of time at all, the police, if they come by and see it, they will say that it's abandoned property, have city sanitation come out, pick it up, and haul it away. They'll leave a notice up on the wall saying that they've taken that property, but you have virtually no way, if you're homeless, of reclaiming that property because you can't possibly carry everything with you that you own 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Does that mean that they're actually, you have verified that they're actually storing it, that in theory, if some good Samaritan suddenly gave everybody 3 acres, you go get the property, it would all be there in pristine condition? Because I understand there was a secondary lawsuit that denied that this was actually happening.
Well, there's a couple of different things there. Well, one thing you said is if somebody had property and would allow people to live on it, they could then have all their property there, and that would work. But the reality of that is no, that the city of Fresno would not allow anybody within the city limits to provide a piece of property they could lot or what have you for homeless people to build shelters that were not within code. And so, I mean, in fact, the property that was destroyed, the encampment that was destroyed yesterday, was on such a property. The owner, from what I understand, what several people have told me, is the owner did not mind that the people were living there. He was fine with it. But the city came in and said, these people have to move. You have to have them move. And the person didn't act on that. The city threatened him with a fine, and that they would be charged with all the cleanup expenses if they didn't authorize the city to go in and clear it out. So then, ultimately, because of this coercion, this person said, okay, I'm asking you to remove the homeless people that are there because I don't want them there. And that's what he had to say in order not to be fined.
Yeah, you kind of have diverged. I mean, I assumed that was the case. What I was saying was, well, two things. I actually have kind of branched off from that. What was, you know, if there was a place where people could store their property legally, I don't know, a huge storage facility was suddenly opened up legally, blah, 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 and homeless people could reclaim their property, would they find going to the yards where the police have dumped their property, that their property is actually there, in good shape, well cataloged, accessible? Or, in fact, weren't you, in fact, aware, you informed us of a lawsuit that was actually going on by the, with ACLU and other groups to claiming that this was not actually happening in spite of the 2007 court decision demanding that it be so. And apparently you're saying there's the outward appearance of it's happening because of all these receipts and bags and, you know, and video and all that stuff. But is it actually happening, even though, as I acknowledge exactly what you're saying, is so what? You can't pick it up. You can't do anything with it. It'll just be picked up again. I accept all that. But is it even there to be picked up?
Well, the answer to that, Robert, is I don't know. We haven't tested that yet. We've been in the middle of, like, other things, but definitely at some point in the near future, within the next 90 days, we will have people go down there and see if their property is there. I suspect that it is. I think that the city has stepped up their game and has evolved a process that would withstand a legal challenge at this point. If not, then that's another story. But it appears that they have gotten a lot of legal counsel on this. They are doing things differently, and in all likelihood, they have people's property stored in some way where if you knew what day your property was taken, you knew where it was taken from, you could probably go in and figure out where it is. Now, I want to see if that's true, but that's the theory right now. So about the lawsuit that you're talking about, there was a class action suit in 07 that ended in a settlement with homeless people at $2.3 million, huge settlement. There were more lawsuits filed after the 2011 demolitions of homeless encampments in the downtown area. But that is different in that it's not a class action suit. There's about 35 individual claimants who are represented by attorneys. The ACLU is not involved at all in this. It's Central California Legal Services and the Arnold and Porter law firm who's in the Bay Area. Those are the two legal entities that are helping the homeless on this case, and what we're alleging is that the city of Fresno, during those raids, took and immediately destroyed homeless people's property. We have photographic and video evidence that that happened. The case is just, you know, in process. It's taking way longer than anybody would like it to, but things are moving ahead. Like, for example, Tuesday of this week, the attorneys for the homeless were able to have a deposition of the mayor of Fresno. And so we're getting lots of good information about who did what, why they did it. And this will eventually lead either to a trial or a settlement by the city of Fresno as we move forward.
Oh, I've also noticed, I've been kind of inspired to sort of read the back and forth between activists and your Fresno Homeless Alliance as they, you know, admittedly it's only for a day or two to come on out there, but they do come out. They are risking arrest. Have any activists actually been jailed who are housed for assisting homeless people in Fresno or engaging in civil disobedience, either you know, through that, through active CD or because the police just improperly arrested them?
No, I can't think of an instance where people have been arrested defending homeless rights. It was interesting because yesterday when all this was happening, the city went way out of their way not to arrest anybody. They didn't want to arrest, you know, have these people arrested who were blocking the bulldozers. The bulldozers came right up to them, and people just stood their ground. And then one bulldozer tried to come in on the other road, and an activist ran over there and sat on the claw of the bulldozer, not allowing it to move any further. So there was definitely provocative actions taken, and I talked to the attorney for the city afterwards, and he just said, yeah, we were going to do everything we could not to arrest anybody. We, you know, we were like totally didn't want to escalate the situation by having people arrested. And in fact, they didn't have uniform officers. That, well, you know, that's not entirely true. There were a couple of them around, but they were way in the background. They had undercover police there monitoring the situation. And so the usually uniformed officers were all dressed down, so you could, you know, not, they weren't there in their riot gear. They were there playing a low-key role that they would have jumped in if something had happened, but they were kind of holding back.
Do you have you ever determined, gotten a copy of the Fresno Police Department's general orders?
Yeah, I did. I got that. I got that about a year ago. It's pretty interesting. Why do you ask?
I always advise people if you're going to file an internal affairs or professional standards complaint, which is essentially a complaint against the police department, that it's often more effective to charge them with violating their own general orders than it is with violating a law. Because that way they face discipline from their superiors. And police officers have this unusual system whereby they don't have the right to claim self-incrimination if they're being questioned by their superior in most departments, or at least in Santa Cruz they don't. They have to answer questions by their superiors or they get fired.
I don't think the officers ask their staff very many inconvenient questions here. They pretty much have a free run to do what they want to do. So
right,
the homeless people is pretty, you know, far down.
Yeah, I'm not suggesting that, you know, that this power is used, but I'm saying I think it's there if the officers wanted to use it. But the reason I asked you is that was going to lead up to the next question, which is in Santa Cruz, because of the work of the now dead Richard Quigley, who was very much concerned with the helmet law, the right of a person to either wear or not wear a motorcycle helmet. And also he was very concerned about abuses in the sheriff's department here. He and his attorney, Kate Wells, or Catnip Kate, as I used to call her, were able to draw to the attention of the courts a section of the vehicle code that states that you have the right to be taken to a magistrate before being jailed or even cited for a violation of the vehicle code. And the Santa Cruz Police Department put into its code that you have the right to be taken to a magistrate before being charged with, I think it's either an infraction or a misdemeanor. And that became an element of strategy in some cases when we were challenging the endless police harassment or the frequent and arbitrary police harassment that homeless people suffer in the downtown area for sitting next to a building, you know, having a, you know, being too close to a garbage can, you know, and these sort of things. That is to say, if a court is open and you are, an officer comes up and wants to write you a ticket for something, you can say, I want to be taken to a magistrate first.
And that's interesting. I had never heard that before.
Yeah, it's part of the general orders of the Santa Cruz Police Department, and it may be that they are doing that because it's part of the I think it's also part of the code, the penal code of the state. Now, I'm not sure under which parts of the penal code it refers to. I think it may be a general part of the penal code. I don't think otherwise the Santa Cruz Police Department would have agreed to this. But you might want to check it out. It's one way of occupying the time of the police department and discouraging them from giving citations. We have not really adopted it as an effective strategy here. It requires more organization than we have. And also, even though they're supposed to have a magistrate's clerk on duty at the jail over the weekend who would certify, you know, yes, this is a legitimate arrest, there's probable cause, and you have to go to a court date, which is the usual outcome of these kinds of encounters. I've I was present at a couple of them. You know, the danger is if you have to be during court hours, or they'll simply hold you in jail over the weekend. And in fact, our city attorney has stated that he is making it a point and encouraging the police to arrest people at the time when it could be most inconvenient for them, and they have to stay way overnight and pick up their property days later, because we have only property pickups on Tuesday and Thursday for 2 hours at the police department.
Wow, yeah, that's interesting. Let me ask you a question, Robert. Yesterday I found a homeless person who had been cited for having their property with them on the street. And now, there's a little bit of background to that. I've come by to find somebody, a homeless person, yesterday, who was with three or four other people, and they had their shopping carts there and some of their possessions around. And then a few minutes after I left, the police pull up and write them all citations. Or what they said, what the citation says, is debris on the road. So the officer said, you've got all this garbage all on the street, and I'm going to write you a citation for littering the street. So they each got a citation for having debris on the road. And to me, it's like they were, alternatively, if you weren't with your property, they would take your property and put it in the storage. But if you're with your property, now they're citing you for having garbage on the street. Have you ever experienced that?
I've never heard of a person getting a debris on the road ticket, but we do have unattended property citation. And there's also just arbitrary confiscation of, and destruction of people's property, though in what appears to be sort of like the first stages of what your Fresno city authorities did, they're beginning to claim that they're holding your property. But I've been talking to people recently who said, you know, I've been there, and they said, we don't have it. So it's you know, and the answer is great. Your question is, I've never heard of anybody using a debris on the road. It sounds like a vehicle code. Is it on the road, like we're talking about in the city, or on the highway, or what are you thinking of?
Yeah, so this was in the old industrial section of downtown Fresno, a very run-down area. They were sitting behind a warehouse. It was on a street, but there's nobody driving down. Nobody drives down that street. There's not even any. It's not like you even load trucks there. Nobody would have a real reason to drive down there. They were sitting on the curb, the sidewalk was behind them, and they had some of their property on the street in front of them, like shopping carts or sleeping bags or something. And that's what I saw, but the police, when they came by, apparently saw that it was all debris and that these people had put it there, and they issued them each a citation. So I'm kind of... That's new to me. I hadn't heard of them doing that before. Usually what they do is they'll drive by, and if there's a shopping cart there or property out, they'll announce on their PA system, you know, or whoever owns this property to remove it immediately or it's going to be taken. And if somebody comes over and gets it, then they could take it away with them. But if nobody comes in a minute or two, they call sanitation department. They come out, wrap it all up, throw it on a flatbed truck, and haul it off somewhere.
With receipts or just dump it?
Well, I believe that they are storing it because they write a receipt. They'll write two receipts. One they'll put in the bag with, you know, the property. And the other, they post on a wall, the nearest wall, and it says the time that it was taken, what it looked like, and who to call for to reclaim that property.
And did they, in the case of this recent new debris strategy, was it removed as debris?
No. It was they were just cited and told to remove it.
You know, it sounds like a gratuitous pick an ordinance, any ordinance kind of thing to me. You know, I it's hard to tell. It, you know, who can fathom the minds of those who have 100 different, you know, burning bamboo nails to choose from, which whatever they want to choose to torture the poor person on the street. I do notice, however, that in your rather well-illustrated article, a lot of photos anyway, of the